Greetings, everybody. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast. It is Wednesday, the 8th of July. This is 2020. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have a very noisy panelist, Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
I am so sorry. I went to, I realized my Mac dings, and then I realized, oh my, I didn't even mute my iPad. I pick up my iPad, and then something like falls. And anyway, hey, Kelly, good to be here. Thanks for having us this Wednesday.
All right. So we have morning show DJ Brian. I'm excited to talk to you a little bit later. I've been trying out new intros for the show. Let me know what you think about it. Observations at MacObserver.com, Timo Daily on Twitter, or comments in the show notes. Just mixing it up, trying to see if there's a better greeting out there for the show to start with. First, today we have a couple of topics. We do. I swear we do. Charlotte gave us a quick piece this morning at MacObserver.com about how independent repair providers, which is a program through Apple where you can get things fixed in an official capacity, even though Apple didn't do it, is a program that is expanding. It's going to be in Europe and Canada, and I believe they've added additional places in the United States. Does that sound right, Brian?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Brian's yes. Riveted by this content. but it's good news if you are a person who maybe dropped your phone and need to get a new screen on it, or you're having some other sort of hardware issue that can't be resolved easily, because particularly right now, that can be a hard thing to get repaired easily. So on the one hand, that's good. But on the other hand, it generally, when it comes to things like fooling around with Apple hardware, one of the things that tends to not be part of the conversation is what would be the best thing for all of the people who bought Apple hardware to be able to do right now. That doesn't ever seem to be part of the conversation. So, Brian, your take on this seemed about accurate.
Yeah, I think it behooves us to note that the long arm of the regulator, especially in the EU, which is a lot more interested in consumer rights than US regulators.
Oh, yes.
That long arm is always, you know, sort of tapping on Apple's shoulder saying, yo. And I would imagine that this is part of Apple's effort to keep that long arm at bay more mm-hmm. than anything else. And regardless, it's good. It's good for consumers. It's good to have more options for getting your stuff fixed. And it's particularly good for, I think, for iPhone repairs and stuff, too, since there are so many iPhones out there. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, good news for consumers. Don't lose sight of the fact that Apple's probably doing this because they, you know, don't want to be hammered by regulators.
Right. They're not doing it for the adulation of the adoration of the public. Like that's
no,
that's not what this is for at all.
It's not for the benefit of those third party companies either.
Right. Those happen to be bonuses if you are a third party repair service, or if you are
a customer who wants to
a customer them. With maybe an iPhone 7 that's been out of warranty for a while, and you want to keep using it instead of buying a whole new phone. You know, it is it is cheaper to replace the screen, and now there are more official places that will allow you to do that. So we just wanted to make sure that people were aware of that. And like I said, we have a link to that over at MacObserver.com where you can learn more if you so desire. So the other thing we have to talk about today is a very interesting article that Charlotte dug up for us. Hi, Charlotte. And this is about a fellow whose name I am inevitably going to pronounce badly, and that's Gavin Ivester? I don't know.
Sure.
This fella Gavin, who is the VP of design at Bang & Olufsen right now.
Can we call him Ivester? Because, you know, it's so close to Johnny Ive. Ivester. 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 Yeah.
Perhaps Johnny himself renamed him, you know, because his name his name needed to be thinner and lighter, right? Yeah, maybe it was a longer name before. Who knows? This person Gavin is now at Bang & Olufsen, and they make They make a great number of things. I discovered today they make television. But primarily what they're known for is audio equipment. They make beautiful headphones, and they make very, very beautiful speakers. And the reason you know they're beautiful is because most of them don't look anything like speakers. They look like an interesting piece of artwork that might sit next, that might sit in the vicinity of your television, and also cost about the same as a car.
And sound good.
They sound amazing. Yes. Yeah, any of the AND brands, I think, are usually pretty good. Bang & Olufsen, very nice speakers. Bowers & Wilkins, which is what's in my house, sound very, very nice. So if there's an AND in the middle, then you're probably in good shape, right? That's solid audio purchasing advice. So anyway, the point is this dude sat down for an interview. And one of the things that he talked about was like his first big design gig, which was the original PowerBook, the 140 and the 170.
Because he worked at Apple.
Yes.
At the time. And yeah, and he tells us, he gives us sort of a behind the scenes look at how it happened. And you look at the PowerBook 140 and 170 today, and they're, I don't know, maybe like a little chunky.
Yes.
Little, and like it's a really tiny screen.
Very chunky, and very small, and monochrome.
At the time, though, they were like
revolutionary.
Pretty. Yeah, they were wild when they came out, and they sort of reset the design language for laptops. He even talked about that in his. In his thing, because the whole notion of putting the keyboard towards the back to give yourself room for having, in this case, a trackball in the front.
Yeah.
Had not been done yet.
Yeah. Nobody had done that.
And he said that it was kind of interesting. It was apparently that idea came from an engineer. The breakthrough came, I'm quoting from TechRadar, the breakthrough came from a system integration engineer named Jonathan Krakauer, who proposed we push the keyboard back and then put the battery in one of the now empty front corners and then the disk drive in the other front corner. And then that left space in the middle for some kind of pointer device, which was a trackball in the case of the 170 and the 140.
The thing, sometimes I feel like some of this stuff gets lost, in the midst of time, right? And so, I know that we say this, regularly, particularly you and I, Brian, about Apple, which is when Apple put out this thing, no one had ever seen anything like it before. Yes, there were computers that were considered laptops that you could take with you to a different location and use them, but they didn't look like this at all. Now this is basically the standard for what a laptop looks like, which is the top opens up and it's a screen. And then there's the keyboard piece that's nearer the hinge, nearer the screen. And then there's the wrist rest area in the front and then your pointer in the center, whether it's a trackball or a trackpad, like that all happens. And when Apple did this, it was an act of revolution. To have done something that way.
I don't know if I call it a revolution, but it certainly did redefine the design language for laptops. But I don't know. Yeah, maybe revolution's fine. I don't know. That seems a little bit grandiose.
Well, in the laptop market, every laptop today looks like this. Is what I'm saying. Nothing looked like this until this did. And now this is what you get. The keyboard is back against the hinge and there's a little bit of space for you to rest your wrists, which you're not supposed to do because ergonomics. And then the trackpad or the trackball in the middle.
Do you remember PC laptops with a nubbin?
Yes.
Like how did those last for so long? Because those lasted a long time.
I think you can still get them, honestly.
Oh, surely not.
I wouldn't be surprised, but I have seen them from a far, far more recent year than is sensible. I will give you that. Yeah, I absolutely can guarantee that. Sure. So the thing that I remember about seeing this was, maybe I'm remembering badly, Brian, maybe didn't they have a handle on the back? Or the original power books that you could like use it to like prop up. Didn't it like fold underneath and prop up the back a little bit? Or am I completely remembering a different power book? Because I don't remember if it was the original or not.
I don't remember that at all.
Okay.
except for the iBook.
Oh, yeah. I remember the iBook handle.
But that's not what you're describing.
No. Not that one at all.
So one of Charlotte's observations, by the way.
Yeah.
On this was that this story and looking at this original power book reminded her or like made her think about the fact that how interesting it was that Apple has been so, as she put it, Apple-y.
Yeah.
For so long. I mean, because this happened under John Sculley, the 170 and the 140. And the 170 and the 140 were really, really good devices, despite the fact that it was not, you know, Steve Jobs and his design team that did it.
Right.
And Apple, you know, Apple definitely gets some credit for that. But yeah, Apple has been pretty Apple. You know, even some of the iconic designs that we think of as being Apple-y were actually done by Frog Design, especially in the 80s. Frog Design did a lot of Apple's casework because Apple didn't have the internal design team, but they were, you know, working off of what Steve Jobs wanted at the time. And quite frankly, those designs are rather Apple-y.
Like which ones?
They did one of the, they did some of the Macintosh builds. Some of the early all-in-one app Macintosh builds.
Okay.
Let's see if we can actually find one of those. Apple Macs by Frog Design.
I'm curious what...
They did Lisa Next Generation, Sneezy, Happy... Bashful, Sleep. Do we have some better ones? Yeah, so the SE was Frog Design, Macintosh SE.
Yeah, I've got one right over there. I'm looking at it now. Yeah.
There was a Lisa with a really big giant screen that was a prototype that they did. Oh, yeah. They did, it looks like they did one of the printers.
Okay.
Oh, Frog helped do the next cube. I'd forgotten about that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that's quite a machine.
Is a fantastic company. They're fantastic designers. They do a lot of different things. They're a really, really interesting company. Yeah, I know there were some other Macs too that they did in the 80s in particular.
Yeah, the thing that I think of, you know, like Charlotte had a similar viewpoint when we talked about the iPhone about how some things have not changed even the tiniest bit, you know, in the iPhone between then and now. And I just think about how different they are because, like, I think about the computer that I have right now, my current edition laptop, which I know isn't current, but, you know, we'll call it a late model MacBook Pro. And there is not one piece of this that I can easily replace myself. And the first PowerBook I owned was the PowerBook 1400 CS. I held out until the processor went from 117 megahertz to 133. So I had a 1400 CS 133. And that thing was like it was built out of Lego. Because you popped off the speaker grill and then you lifted up the keyboard and bam, there was the innards of your machine. I put new RAM in it. I put a new hard drive in it. I put... I put another couple things in it and it was literally two steps. You just pressed down on the speaker grill a little bit, which was back by the hinge, and pressed down on it a little bit, slide it to the left and lift it out. And part of what came out with the speaker grill was this little rail that held down the back of the keyboard. And then you pop the keyboard out and there's all the guts of your machine right there. You need to put more RAM in it, pop it out, pop in new RAM, close everything back up. Again, two steps. Turn everything on and move on with your day. It was fantastic. Yeah.
Good times.
And that computer, just to date myself completely, that computer came with a mail-in coupon so that I could get a new US Robotics 33.6 PC card modem to stick in the side of it.
Was that before or after they did color TV?
Oh, gosh. I don't know.
We're old. Yeah.
I loved that machine so very, very much. I clung to it desperately for many years past its useful life. And it was also the one that had the cover where you could put on the clear cover and you could put whatever image you wanted behind it, you know, so you could have your computer be custom to you without having to put stickers on it. God, I love that computer. I really did. And you know, and part of what made it a useful machine, like I think about it now, and you know, I remember when I first got it and took it with me to my job at the time, and somebody referring to it as 6.5 pounds of fun, right? And that was just an unbelievably portable computer in its time at 6.5 pounds. Mm-hmm. You know, and so like, you know,
that's either like a really cool laptop or a briefcase full of coke.
Yes.
It's one of the two.
Yes. In this case, hey, it was a computer.
6.5 pounds of fun.
Yeah. At this job, it was the laptop.
That's okay. Good. Yeah. That's for the best.
Yeah. The other ones, we talk about the other one on a different show. Like, one of the things that this is why I talk about the fundamental shift, because like I had this laptop and other people had laptops from other companies that were not Apple, and I remember like looking at mine and looking at those and thinking how clunky those other ones were, you know, in its time. And so it's a thing. That's why I talk about it being an act of revolution to shift everything the opposite way around, because everybody else, you know, he mentions in the article that the keyboard piece had always been up against the front edge so that it was as much like typing on a desktop machine as possible, so that the keyboard was very close to you and the screen was as far away as it could be. So making that change, which sounds like a very obvious thing, you know, except that it hadn't happened at that point. So and then he talks a little bit more about design language, because now he, like we said, he works at Bang & Olufsen, and he designed footwear for a while in the middle of that too. So he's had a very interesting career, and he talked a little bit about how design is supposed to, like how design is influenced by how people use the thing that you're designing and that kind of thing. And so I am always very interested in reading stuff like this that goes into a little bit of the thinking behind some things. Yeah. You know, like how this got designed, how it's, you know, how it's made, a show I love. We've talked about it here. That kind of stuff is always very interesting to me. So, Brian, what was your first PowerBook? Did you have a PowerBook?
My first PowerBook would have been a Pismo.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I had the awesome Thai book. And,
oh, I loved the Thai book.
Then I think I did a 17-inch.
Yeah, I could see that.
I can't remember if there was one in between the Thai book and the 17-inch.
Yeah, I did like that. Yeah. All of the Thai book model, that was that's my favorite laptop keyboard that Apple ever released.
Yeah, fair enough. It was a great keyboard.
It was so good. It was so springy. It made me happy. Yeah. Anyway, this has been Get Off My Lawn with Brian and Kelly. We're off to go watch VHS tapes later of Magnum PI.
I will be watching the Rockford Files. You can watch Magnum PI, because I loved the Rockford Files.
I too loved Rockford Files. I just couldn't think of anything else on VHS tape right off the top of my head. And I know I used to tape.
That was good. That was Magnum PI.
There you go.
That was solid.
All right. That's going to do it for us today. If you definitely go check out the article, we'll have a link to it in the show notes. You should definitely read a little bit more about Gavin's career. And he digs a little bit more into the story of how the PowerBook was made. So you should go check it out. Brian, thank you for being here with me, as always. Yep.
Thanks for having me, Kelly.
And I am your host, Kelly Gamano. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other and let's be careful out there.